You're listening to The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
All right, well, let's answer it. It's not nasty. It's just it's not right. Why is McMahon in games like these? When playing against athletic teams, his numbers drop tremendously. I mean, it goes on to list numbers. What do you get? And he says Macy got out and they had to switch to a 2-3 zone to compensate. They played zone one possession, okay, once. And UK did a really nice job adjusting. Tip your hat to the other guy. Turn taken by surprise, and they just, bam, they scored. And he said, yeah, Mac panicked and switched to zone randomly for the first time in his career and had to rush out of it. They say that's when coaches get, if that takes legs, hopefully the listeners are smart enough to know that that won't get legs, but that's why I like to put the kibosh on that. He plays zone. He has zone. He plays 1-3-1 more than he plays 2-3, but he has zone in his arsenal. He's coached it before. He prefers man-to-man. If you just sit there and do nothing, then they criticize you for doing nothing. He tried to give him a different look. It's worked in the past. They've done it. They did it earlier this year, and they got stops out of it. You're just trying to steal a possession in a game that goes to overtime, and they couldn't do it because Kentucky did a good job. Tip your hat. Even Mac addressed how they just ran screens until they got McMahon on their guard and let that guard break down. That's not what they did. They run a bunch of stuff on the baseline, and they weren't running it on specifically on McMahon. They were running it for Maxey. And Louisville doesn't switch those very often. They only switch the ball screens. So when he was running off screens, he was running to try and get himself free no matter who was being guarded by. So that's not what he said. If you don't like Ryan, it's your opinion. I mean, when you play in a market like this, you got to have thick skin, even though you're a college kid. So, Ryan, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Not everybody loves you. Not everybody loves me. Not everybody loved anybody. Every player in the history of this program has been probably nobody who's been universally loved. Maybe Griff, I don't know, but that's the nature of the beast. But the fact of the matter is that's not what he said. He plays zone. He mixed it up. He tried to mix one in there. Didn't work, but he tried. And it wasn't necessarily just for McMahon. It was just to get him out of their man-to-man offense. And they weren't running off screens to get McMahon. They were running off screens because that's what they do on the baseline. So, sorry. So I tried to respond on the air. It was such a long text, I tried to answer by text, but hopefully you're still listening. If you're listening on 93.9 The Ville, maybe you didn't hear that answer, but at least I answered you, which is what I'm trying to do. I don't run away from questions. I just don't have time to get to all of them. It's like a ticker tape in here. They're coming in so fast. Let's see what else we got here. That's got nothing to do with this game, so we'll leave that out. I'm a UK fan. I didn't think UK could win just because they haven't shot well all year and other teams take UK to the rim. This game, UK hit some threes and Louisville settled for a lot of jump shots. That's a fair analysis. But here's the thing. And it's what Mike Pratt said, and he's right. There's a difference between not being able to shoot and being inconsistent in shooting, or a better term, streak shooting. This is a streak shooting Kentucky team. They're not incapable. They just aren't going to shoot it. I had a kid, I'll never forget this. I had a kid that played for me. He shot, like, without exaggeration, he must have shot almost 40% from the 3-point line. But if you'd have watched some of his shots, you'd have said, that can't possibly be right. Because he would go, he'd make two, then he'd miss one that would be like an air ball by 3 feet. Then he'd make another two, and then he'd miss two by shooting one that hit the side of the backboard, and one that like went over the backboard. And you say, how the hell can he be shooting 40%? But he does, because he was not a consistent shooter. He was a streaky shooter, and ultimately the percentage was good. Kentucky's a streak shooting team. The percentage is not good, but they are streaky. And what happened is they had a good streak in the Garden in the Champions Classic, especially Maxey, and they had another good streak the other day. To their credit, though, some of the threes they took were absolute like set shots. You're not a good 3-point shooting team if you're shooting pressured threes. But if you let guys just stand there and shoot it, I mean, come on. I mean, you could take some announcers who'll go out there and they'll knock some shots down. Paul Rogers will shake free for a J. He'll knock one down. I mean, that's the reality. So they gave up some easy shots to them, but. The second part of that is, if you want to, like I said, if you want to talk about things to be not concerned about, like I think it's trouble, but something has to be addressed, free throw shooting doesn't have to be addressed. Louisville's going to be a fine free throw shooting team. They've got enough data in the books. I'm positive of that. But what they are going to do is have to figure out how to play when people get all up in them defensively. Texas Tech did that. They didn't respond that well. They did in this game. And you can't give people skill sets they don't have. The skill sets are that they do not have a lot of guys who can beat you off the dribble. So these teams that took UK to the rim, as the texter pointed out, correctly, it's some, you know, matchups make games. So Louisville was forced to play. Good coaching by Cal. These guys, you know, they don't pay these guys money for having oatmeal for brains. They put a game plan together to try and make Louisville have to play to their weaknesses, and he did effectively do that to a degree. And Louisville still won the game because Louisville's a good team, but they did, you know, force them to try to put the ball to the floor and go to the basket, and they don't have a lot of guys who can do that, which is why he changed his attack. This year, he went to more of a motion-based offense because I think they could do that well. But then they didn't execute that well. I don't care what system you run. If you don't execute it well, you're going to have a hard time. And Jordan especially was very disappointing to me because he would make one cut and stop. It's kind of like a defensive lineman. You watch the great defensive lineman. The guy gets blocked. He gets knocked. He gets up. And he gets back in the play, and he chases the play. And he said, my God, he was the right tackle. How the hell did he come over and make that play on the left sideline? Because he just kept moving, kept playing. Jordan didn't do that yesterday. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. But he allowed himself to be guarded too easily. You've got to be hard to guard. Maxey made himself hard to guard. He was running off screens, curling, fading, two baseline screens, come back, double back, come back off a screen, go off a pin down. That's what you do. But Louisville's offense is a motion offense where they are supposed to be reacting that way themselves. Defense takes this away, I do that. Defense takes that away, I do this. And he allowed himself to be guarded too easily. And I think one of the reasons they got better when he came out is because the players, you know, it's not we're dumping this all at his feet. Everybody else looked at each other and thought, oh, spit, he's not out here. We got to get shots ourselves. And so then they started moving. And they got some baskets in transition. They got some movement without the ball to get themselves free. Dwayne Sutton, again, just doing whatever the game asks for, desperately needed somebody to exploit the fact that everybody else was closed out. He broke to the high post, would catch the ball, put it to the floor, get inside, draw fouls, get to the basket, get three-point plays. You know, then they also, one of the things you give up when they extend that far is you give up post play because the postman's on an island over there. So they and Steven, to his credit, I mean, the offense is right in front of us in the second half, and so it was pretty good. He was given a lot of communication with nods of the head and pointing and gesturing and thinking one, two passes ahead, which is what good postmen do. You know, nodding, throw it here. He's going to enter it to me. And then he'd wave the guy through. It was plenty of time on the shot clock so he could back in, and then make that little jump hook. He was good. He was very good. And he stepped up. So, that is the counter adjustment they had to make. But you're right that UK was daring Louisville. And then a couple of times they did take it to the basket. And the big guys were doing a good job of coming over and helping and getting some blocks and intimidating shots. But, you know, again, one of the reasons why I got to tip my hat to Fresh. Because, you know, they are so big. And they are big. I mean, Kentucky's really got a big squad. That sometimes you see it and you think, well, I'm not going in there because you're right. Why would you go in there and take it right to the aircraft carriers, as Al McGuire used to call them? You don't want to do that. But Fresh was like, well, the hell is it? If they're going to extend on everybody else, I'm just going to have to get in there and make a play. And he got in there. He made that really tough reverse layup on the other side of the rim. He was taking it to the basket. And sometimes you got to have that mindset, which is, all right, they're going to block one or two, but we're going to get in there. We're going to score more than one or two, and we're going to draw fouls. And he did a good job of that. So they had some guys step up and give them what the game needed. But by and large, they certainly didn't shoot it very well. And, it was a game plan that was well put together by UK, but again, it's a tie game, basically. It's a tie game. I mean, that's the bottom line. Nobody is saying they hate Ryan. That's just not the game for him. It hasn't been for 5 years. Doing something different is not choking if what you normally do isn't working. All you do is apologize. Everything with your statement was fine up to the last. I'm not apologizing for anybody. I'm analyzing the game. And choking, to me, you go, okay, disagree. That's fine. If you are making crap up on the spot, you're choking. Because what you're saying is, I don't think my team's good enough to win this game. So you can disagree on that. So there you go. You know, but it's amazing because I just got a text criticizing him for playing zone. Well, he did something different there. Are you happy with that? No. Oh, that's, you know, that's crazy. You know, but no, that's choking because he doesn't play zone. No, he does play zone. He plays zone just like he did there as a surprise element. And he ran it out and it didn't work that time. So there you go. I'm not apologizing for anybody. And if you're saying, okay, if you're telling me, I'll grant you your argument, as I always like to do, I'm going to go to my team and say, fellas, we can win this game, but we can't play the way we play because we're not good enough. So, Ryan, you started every game this year, but I'm not starting you today. I'm sorry. I just have you coached? If you have, let me know how that works for you. I suggest that most coaches would tell you your team will look at you like you got a certain hole in the middle of your forehead. That's all I'm saying. You make adjustments. Now, should you have run the last play for him there? All right. I mean, I'll say that. He hasn't made a shot all day, basically. Okay. But that's, you know, what else? What, you know, he needs a quick hit there. Do you think you got a better chance to score making something up in the huddle there or going to a play you've run every day in practice for 3 months to a guy who's career-wise like a 40% three-point shooter? That's your opinion. So you'd say, nope, I'm not going to because he can't do it in this game. Okay, but don't tell me I'm apologizing. I'll say what I want to say. I know what I'm saying. Don't read into it, okay? If you disagree with it, you're free to disagree with it. Don't give me motivations that I don't have. I'm analyzing the game, and you're welcome to share in it. If you don't want to, again, it's free country. Do whatever you want, but that's all I'm doing. Let's see. Louisville's playing too nice. I don't buy that. U of L is being owned in this matchup to the point they're literally letting UK radio network personalities on the U of L pregame show. I assume if you're alluding to me talking to Pratt, we've done that for 13 years. We do it every year. So, again, if playing too nice, I don't think they're playing nice. They played their asses off. They just weren't. They were 1 point too short. That's all. There you go. I agree with this, though. I think if somehow Louisville should have played a game. That's where the layoff affects free throw shooting. It really does. And you can say, what are you talking about? Still 15 feet away because you haven't shot him in the environment of a game. I thought it was – I felt the long layoff, I don't like those. That was a rough – I would have squeezed a directional school game in there somewhere and you know, tried to play one between the last game, the Miami game, and this one. Just get one more in there and not have quite such a long layoff. Let's see. Just seemed like likely UK would foul. Okay, talk about that. The turnover out of the timeout. They brought the ball over the court, down the floor. They called timeout, and they turned it over. Texas says that's ridiculous. So it certainly is not the proudest moment, but it happens. I mean, I'm not apologizing for it, but I don't question the execution. I mean, in the terms of the execution, meaning it happens. You make good execution, good things happen. You make bad execution. Bad things happen, but the fact of the matter is, you always ask what were they trying to do, and I understand why you do that. You wanted to run a set play, and you know, but there's if you call timeouts are weird. People like them or hate them. Why do you call timeout? Go in the flow, and then people say no. You know, call timeout and run a play. It's always hindsight. If you score, it's a great decision. If you don't, it's a bad decision. I just try to tell you why I think he was doing it, which was you have coaches like control. And you have more control when you do that than you do if you just go in the chaos. So he wanted to bring the ball up. You know where you're going to inbound it. That's why he made him bring it to that side of the court. Want to inbound it on the right side. Let's run what we're going to run. And then obviously they didn't execute it very well. Ryan was not the problem. His effort was there, and he made some good passes. That's a great point. For me, it was Wara, supposedly the main man, way underperforming. Nobody could make threes for us, but he had other issues of under. But that was my point is that's, you know, Ryan played hard. He didn't play well. He played hard. He did make some good passes. Jordan, I was surprised, allowed himself to be guarded as easily as he was. That was the point I was making. Let's see. Nobody hates Ryan. I'm all in for game adjustments when someone's such a liability on defense and doesn't compensate on the offensive end. What's allowing him getting minutes over players? Well, there you go. Everybody loves the freshman. He put Williamson in, and Samuel got fouls like he was had a bus waiting. He was trying to get out. So, I mean, what did you see there that would make you say, that kid should have got minutes? So, is this Raph right here? Raph's not here. You had Raf and he disappeared. Okay? So I was hurrying through that point, and then he was. It's like people don't actually watch the game. The go-to excuse is just blame McMahon's defense. It's funny and true. I mean, I watched him. He's not a great defender. He's way better than he was, and I don't think he was the reason they didn't win the game. I mean, you're right. We just love to dump it at his lap. I feel like they should have fed it through Enoch. They did. They threw it to Enoch a lot. I mean, look how many shots he took. Is this Raf finally? All right, here we go. Guy who had the call on CBS. Great pleasure to welcome him to the program for just a few minutes anyway. Bill Raftery. Raf, how are you? Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Same, Bobby, to you. Good to see you the other day.
Pretty exciting
atmosphere, huh?
Oh, my God, was it loud. I had my head on. My ears were ringing for hours after that. Tell the folks your impressions, and don't say I don't do impressions, of the game from Lexington. What'd you make of that?
I thought they played extremely well without their leader. You know, their dominant player not having an A game, which happens to a lot of guys, but just to muster what they could and hang in there and have a chance to win it was pretty exceptional, because he just struggled all game long, just was not with it, you know. And you know, you coached, kids have days like that. But I thought Fresh became apparent that he's going to have a heck of a finish, I think. Just that ability, Lamar, I should say, to run a team and take advantage, showed his speed. I was impressed with him quite a bit. But on the whole, I just think it was an away game that you had a chance to win and didn't win.
Let me ask you this. There are things that you know as a coach that you look at, like Louisville's free throw shooting. And he's not going to make a big deal about that, because it just happens. They practice free throws. They're a good free throw shooting team. It was one of those days. But what things do you look at that you say, boy, if I'm on the practice floor, I got to get after that a little bit? What might you have seen from Louisville in that regard?
Anything about the dribble drive is always a major issue. Using the post rubs that Kentucky did with all the fade screens, tagging the guy or going over the top, or the bigs hand hedging a little bit more, to help their partner out. I think it's just some execution too, as you well know. Late in the games, guys got to make plays, and whatever you set up, they have to execute. So repetition is probably as far as the free throws are concerned, it happens to every team, it seems like, that it costs them a game when they look back and they put on a few extra possessions that Richards gave them, that you didn't stick them and keep them off the glass. Those things, the Sestina's big rebound and kick, did they really put a body on him? Just those are the kind of things. I think you look at the tape and say, we got to button up.
Do you, Jordan, before I let you go, I want to ask you about this, because the single thing, I never like to just call a kid out, but you're right. He's their main guy, and he was almost invisible for much of the game. What bothered me was that I thought he was too easy to defend. He doesn't do much without the ball, and that's how teams are going to play him now. What'd you make of that, Billy?
Well, I said it on the air. He's a pretty good cutter, getting free. And he didn't do any of it with any speed or intent or idea of, establishing himself in position to dominate. And I just think he was in the doldrums a little bit. I mean, this kid, I think he's a big-time talent, and I think that'll come to fore. I think it's probably a learning lesson for him. The scouting report knows who the main guy is. So now what are you going to do to still be dominant? And I think that's part of why you play games like that and why you prepare yourself for the big time come NCAA tournament time.
Before I let you go, we obviously have some UK fans in our listening audience as well. What'd you take away from UK, this team that supposedly can't shoot it? They shot it pretty well on this day.
Well, the day before, I don't know if we chatted about it. The day before at practice, the only statement they made every shot. On all their drills, they were making shots. And I think this was a very important game for them. That would have been three in a row, which hasn't happened since I can remember. many, many years ago it may have happened. But at any rate, I just think that, you know, the guards, if they shoot the ball, are a different team. You know, if Richards gives them that kind of a game on a consistent basis, they're a different team. But the one thing they do well, as you know from watching them, is they guard. And they really do get after you, and they work hard on it. So I think that game is a confidence builder for them and the start of something pretty good.
Where are you headed now, Billy? Where's your next game?
Hello.
Yeah, you were still here.
I'm sorry, I thought I lost. Oh, okay.
Where are you headed now? Where's your next game?
I'm actually going over to Villanova's practice.
Nice. Well, that's a good day. Well, let me let you go. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for taking some time. It was great to see you in Lexington, Bill. Thanks.
Same here. Good luck with everything.
Take care. Bill Raftery. Well, I'm glad he said that on the air because I wasn't just making it up. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He's got the capability, Jordan, of being a really good cutter. But I don't know why he just – you just don't know. That's why they're not – you know, that's why I always say that's the thing about coaching. And I'm dead serious about this. When I was a kid, I've been playing table sports games since I'm like 10. And honest to God, I really believe there's part of that that helps you when you grow, you know, be mature as an adult to want to be a coach. Because even in a little table game, if you got a guy, for example, in foul trouble, you got to figure out how you're going to manage his minutes. You know, some of these more sophisticated games, they only have so many minutes they can play. There's an endurance rating. It helps you manage people. But the difference is the cards are always the same. Their demeanor never changes. If you play a computer game, their demeanor never changes. The challenge in coaching is that. I have no idea why he was like that. And unless you can figure out and tap into that, it's very difficult. I even asked Chris that after the game. And I mean, he didn't treat it as a BS question. I said, you know, seriously, you're used to coaching a team where, okay, Jordan's a guy who's going to get 20. He's, you know, I know that. And Ryan's going to make shots. And one thing, we get to the free throw line, we're going to make free throws. And boom, we're not making free throws. And Ryan can't hit anything. And Jordan is invisible. What goes through your head at, you know, as a coach at that point? Where are you looking? Because it's a possession game. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, when they were down, okay, now you got to change, you got to figure out a way to yank it back on the rails. But now once it gets back to 3 points, 4 points, you're talking about a one possession game. What do you do now to try and get that one possession back? And he said basically, you know, what you think he'd say. It's not easy, but you just try and get a feel, and you still, you know, you show confidence in guys who've been good for you in the past. And, you know, the fact of the matter is you just – there is no easy answer to it because if it were, you know, anybody would put it in a bottle, as the cliche goes, and sell it at coaching conventions. You just got to figure it out. Sometimes – you know what he said to me? This is what he said. Basically, the players solved it. In that, you know, he's pointing out what has to be done, but he can't do it. And they got to that timeout, and they basically just, I think it was Dwayne, basically, and Malik just said, enough of this crap. Let's go play basketball here. What the hell are we doing here? And they went out, and you could see when they came out of that timeout, everything was a half step faster. See, that's what I always say. People think, I'm not lecturing, I'm just telling you my observation. People think coaching is really defining what is to be done. And it's true. You have to, if you make bad decisions about what you're doing, you're hurting your team's chance to win. But it's not that any more or as important as what you're doing is how you're doing it. That, I mean, like, for example, you can go to a coaching clinic and see five different coaches talk about what a pick and roll is, but you'd hear five different approaches about how they run it, when they run it, why they run it. There's different approaches. That's the whole point, and that's what you were looking at. So he didn't come up with some super-duper secret play. What they were doing didn't actually change a lot. How they were doing it changed, and that's ultimately, in many ways, the key to coaching. Tim Sullivan from the Courier-Journal was at the game. He's the one who pointed out that stat, and I'll start with that as Tim joins us. Thanks for being with us, Tim. You had the story of Louisville was, well, I keep forgetting it, Nick. I've said it 10 times. I still haven't quoted it right. Plus 12 without Jordan and minus 18 with him or something like that. Is that what
plus
it was?
10.
Plus 10 and minus 18. What's your takeaway from that? Is it not trying to put a bow tie on a pig, but is that a confidence builder for the rest of the team or just further amplification that Jordan has, unfortunately, the capability of impacting the game very well, but also in a bad way, and they've got to address that? How did you look at that?
Well, I think a lot's going to depend on what they take out of this. I mean, I can't get inside their heads, but, you know, the thing I was thinking about while I was listening to you and Bill was that these guys are not robots, and you can play a table game, and as you say, that the cards are the cards and they don't change. But we don't know what was going on with Jordan and his state of mind or his physical state. Maybe he had a sore ankle. I don't know. He didn't do any interviews after the game, but I think that if the players look at this as we can cope on a night when our best player doesn't perform, you can take something from that. It's a loss, but it's not a conference game. It's not an elimination game. They got a long way to go, and they're going to have nights where different guys are bigger contributors than others, and I don't think this is the end of the world, but I do think that they need to see which Jordan war they have on a day-to-day basis. And the one I've seen for the first 12 games of the year was awfully good.
That's the thing. You make a good point, actually, is he's had games where he hasn't shot it especially well, and you say, okay, well, but he was a presence. You know what I mean? He was at least you had to respect that he was getting himself in positions to shoot the ball. There were stretches where, one time I had to check to see if he was still in the game, and I'm not saying it to be nasty. I was like, did they take him out? And then ultimately they did take him out. But that's, Tim, that's ultimately what a great player does, as much as actually put the numbers up. It's the fact that he impacts the game by being such a threat that he makes other people better. And that maybe was the thing that you could actually say that Maxey did, is that he not only was good, but he certainly helped make some of his teammates better because they had to be so concerned with him. And Jordan wasn't able to not only score himself, but he didn't do a whole lot to get his teammates better in this game.
Well, in some ways, I thought it was revealing to watch him versus Maxey, and just in terms of the athleticism. And there were plays that Maxey made that would be very low percentage shots for any normal player, and he made them. I was really impressed with his body control and the things he could do that you just don't normally see. I think he's a different kind of player than Jordan, and probably not as good a pure shooter. But I would love to have a guy like that on my team. Just all the things he brings to the table, the energy, the improvisation, and maybe that got into War's head that maybe I'm not the king of the hill around here. Maybe there's a guy who does things that I can't, and I can't read his mind, and I'm not going to try. But I doubt that this is going to be a long term funk for him. But it was certainly a step back from what we've seen. Whether it continues, stay tuned.
Talking to Tim Sullivan from the Courier-Journal, Louisville has the advantage of playing their next two games at home, where they've been very good. They play Florida State, and then they play Miami before they go to three difficult road games. But, I sometimes feel like, I sound like I'm trying to put a bow tie on a pig, and I'm not. The game is essentially a tie. I mean, it's a tie. It ended in a regulation, ended in a tie. Kentucky had Maxey play splendidly, and when he plays that way, they're a very good team. Louisville had their best player almost invisible and shot free throws well below their norm, and the game was still a tie on the road. I don't know. If you can't walk away from that and say, well, it certainly shows we've still got great potential with this team, then I just don't think you're analyzing the data. But what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, there are the questions that existed about U of L going into the game, guard play particularly, are still there. Now you have a question of whether your best player is well suited to big stages, which a question I don't think was present going into that game. But at the same time, you've gotten contributions from guys that you hadn't counted on. I think you know, Fresh Kimball had not scored more than one field goal in eight straight games, and you know, he was a real force down the stretch when they were making that comeback. And you know, I think you have to take something from that. I think that they got a very good game out of Stephen Enoch, and you know, Dwayne Sutton. I know you're the president of his fan club. You know, just gets tough rebound after tough rebound, and I have a lot of admiration for him and how hard he plays every game. There's a lot of things to be encouraged about from that game, but you know, you do have some questions as well, and that's you know, that's what December basketball is about. This team is not going to be defined by this game, and I don't think it should be knocked off of its trajectory by one loss on the road against a you know very talented rival.
Talking to Tim Sullivan from the Courier-Journal, I think that one thing I think you can say is we're getting close. As I said, January 11th, you'll know. It doesn't mean you'll know whether they're good or bad or in the middle, but you'll know how they need to play. Kentucky, even though they shot it really well, their bread and butter night in and night out is going to have to be getting after people and being a defensive team. They're good defensively. He emphasizes it. He pushes it. Those kids really put great pressure on, and that is going to have to be the untouchable part of the non-negotiable part. Louisville is going to have to get to a point. They're the same way. Their defense has been good, but I think for them, they've got to get back to getting good player movement where it complements what they're doing defensively because, you know, that defense, you're working really hard, and then sometimes it's difficult when you've played defense for that many seconds to come down the floor and have a lot of energy. But for them to be good, Tim, maybe I'm wrong, your opinion, they're going to have to play with that same energy on the offensive end. They've got to be harder to guard. They got to move without the ball because they just don't have a lot of guys who are going to be able to break you down off the dribble. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that this is a team, the Kentucky team, that is maybe not as skilled as it has been in the past, but very athletic. They're going to have to get a lot of transition baskets, I think, and lean hard on Maxey. Seems to be the one guy who's most capable of creating a shot and making something out of nothing. It's become a cliche to say, you know, you can't really evaluate a Kentucky team in December. They don't hit their stride until February or March. But this is not a freshman dominated team. This is there's a little more experience, and I don't know that it has quite the ceiling that previous Kentucky teams have had. But you know, geez, how many coaches would trade their talent straight up for what Calipari has?
Truth, there's not much doubt about that. Let's shift gears a little bit and head to the gridiron. Louisville kicks off here in a couple of minutes, and we're very, you know, all the talk and all of the postseason histrionics are well in the books right now. What is on the line for Louisville in this game in your mind?
Well, I think that there's not all that much really on the line. I mean, you don't want to end the season with the taste in your mouth that you get from the Kentucky game where you get blown out by your rival. But, you know, the season has been a success. Whatever happens today, given how far they've come from 2-10, with a new staff, with you know, some deficiencies on defense, certainly, but you know, you've got playmakers on offense who are coming back, and you've got a new staff that seems to have energized not only the team but the fan base. You know, I think if they win or lose today, if it's respectable, I think Louisville fans should be encouraged that the future is going to be better than this season, and certainly a lot better than last season. You know, I was looking at some recruiting rankings this morning, and I think they're ranked 39th. Kentucky, I think, was 23rd, something like that, which is not great. But you know, if you can fill some of the holes that we've seen, and they're inability to stop anybody, just get that up to a decent level, I think you've got a pretty good sustainable product here, and I think a win would be great for the program, but I don't think a loss is necessarily a setback.
How about the Belk Bowl for the Blue Guys, where, I don't know, I keep hearing bowl games don't mean anything to players, and then we're hearing the story about at the car racetrack, there was all sorts of smack talk going on, the Virginia Tech players or something. I don't know. I just, players are players. But what's on the line for them, given where they, I mean, such a different scenario. They came off such a year last year, and Louisville came off such a chaotic year. I agree with you about what you said about Louisville, by the way. What's on the line for Kentucky? Any different scenario there just because they came off such a good year last year?
Well, if a bowl team, second tier or third tier bowl is the new normal for Kentucky, that's a big step from when I first started working in Louisville. And I don't want to say the Kentucky fans are spoiled by last year, but you have to think that that's the aberration and not the norm. And you're not going to have a Josh Allen and a Benny Snell every year, that said, I do think that the aspirations of that program have grown. You're still climbing the mountain in the SEC, which is incredibly tough. And you can have a 23rd in the nation in recruiting, and probably 11th or 12th in the SEC. That's how strong that league is. And you're in the easier division, but there's a lot of traditional power there with Georgia and Tennessee, and I won't include my alma mater, but there have been days when Missouri was a decent program. I can't remember them, but it's been a while. I think that this is a good season, not a great season, and it's a lot better than it was when Mark Stoops took over. And I think anyone with any perspective would have to say that, if seven wins is going to be the standard now, and then periodically you can, raise that to 9 or 10, that's awfully good in the SEC for a program that has been traditionally a punching bag.
All right, so if you were going to one of these bowl games just because you wanted to get the swag bag, which would be your choice of these three? The Red Box Bowl, the Tony the Tiger Bowl, which is now the Sun Bowl, or the famous Idaho Potato Bowl? Which you got? I have no idea what they give out at these bowls, but just by their name, which one would you want the swag bag from?
Well, you got to understand, I'm Irish. And, potatoes are very dear to my heart. It's probably reason for my heart problems, but I would have to go with the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
All right. Nick's pumping his fist. He agrees. I think I would have to maybe go with Tony the Tiger Bowl. You know why, don't you? Because they're great. I had to do that.
All right. No, you didn't have to do it.
If you listen to this show, yes, I did. You know I had to.
Still a 12-year-old.
Yes, that's. If ever you wonder what a radio would sound like hosted by a 12-year-old, you have your answer. Buddy, Happy New Year to you. Take care of yourself. I'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
All right. Tim Sullivan with us. Glad he was with us as well. Some more texts, some more of your comments. You can text us at 437-9680. Why does the voice one come up as a different number? Oh, no, that's the number it came from. Oops. Let's see. That's a good point. How can you have a top five class and not play them? Because you get to the practice floor and the guys you've got are better. You're too wrapped up in the people making their living by telling you 3 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars. Get on the practice floor. That's why. That's why until you go to practice and watch them play, you can't. That's the
You know, play the young guys. What are they sitting for? Why can't Rick have this team? Oh, well, you're a Rick guy. Okay, next place. Part of the criticism. Stoops is only the second coach in UK history to win seven or more games 4 years in a row. If he wins seven-plus next year, he'll be the only UK coach to ever do 5 years in a row. Look, I try and be an analyst. Not to, you know, I definitely, you know where my heart lies, who I'm rooting for, but I also am trying to be analytical. And he's done a terrific job. There's no getting around it. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. You win eight games in college football. It's like winning 20 games in college basketball. It doesn't mean it's a great season anymore. It used to be a great season, but now they play 30 games, but still winning two-thirds of your games. That's the same thing in football. Two-thirds of your games would be eight wins. Seven wins is like about an 18-win season in basketball. Not great, but if you're an 18-win team in a school that's not traditionally been great in basketball, yeah, they're pretty happy about that. If you win 18, then 20, you know, and that's when last year they won 10. That's like a 25-win season in basketball. That's a great season. So, I mean, the reality is that consistently they've been very good. And people, oh, you set the bar too low. You don't understand. And you don't when they're the first loser. Okay, Ricky Bobby, thanks. But I'm just telling you, I deal with reality. And the reality is there's 150, 130, whatever it is, Division I football teams and power teams or 70 power teams, whatever it is. And there's only five power conferences. And so you got yourself a challenge. No disrespect to some of the other leagues. I mean, Louisville came up through Conference USA and did about as well as you could in there. That's the reality. But it's definitely more challenging to be in an ACC or an SEC than in Conference USA. I mean, well, that's not particularly profound. If it weren't, you wouldn't be trying to get out of those leagues. It's more challenging because it's also a lot more lucrative. But the fact of the matter is that's a pretty good run he's had, and it's one that goes in the history books if he does it again. So you're absolutely right. Ryan McMahon can't guard athletic guards. Okay. Whoever sent that text, God bless you, sir. It's like people don't even watch the game as soon as they don't play well. Dump it on McMahon. Do you think that was all Ryan McMahon? Really? Seriously? Wow. He is what he is. He's not a great defender. Jordan's not a great defender. They're both much better than they were. Kentucky's ability to score the basketball through Maxey was not Ryan McMahon's problem. He got in foul trouble. He got beat a few times, but he played hard, and he certainly, nobody's apologizing for he didn't have a good game, but boy, oh boy, it is, guys, text us like people don't even watch the game. It's just as soon as they have trouble, they dump it in his lap. I mean, he's gotten a lot better at that. I don't know what you see that I'm not seeing. He was not great. I'm not sure who was able to guard Maxey. They had Sutton on him a lot to try and close him down. You didn't notice that. And I'm the president of the Sutton fan club. If Dwayne were here, I'm sure he'd tell you he's not an easy guy to guard, especially the way they were playing. They were running him off an obstacle course down there. And the kid made himself hard to guard. My argument with Jordan is he – and I'm glad Billy Raftery said the same thing. I didn't set him up for that. It's like when the magician comes out. I did not meet this man before the show. I didn't ask him to make that statement. He said it during the program. He was – very, I don't know what the term he used, he just was not active. And when you're not active, you're easy to guard. I agree. I didn't mean to respond to that guy. That's not worth responding to his texts. Let's see. I think we've covered most of the other ones if we haven't yet. And it's where, oh no, there's a whole slew here. Yikes. I'll see if I can get to those in just a bit. Before I do that though, let me tell you about what's going on. Do we have to ask him to state his business? I think so. State your business. We just got ready to do some commercial stuff, but, now he's in management. You can just walk in whenever the hell he wants. What do you want?
We need to have a format. I was trying to hide from you, but that did not work. I'm only in here to try to fix one of the 1997 computers we have in here.
Do any of them work is the question. And were any of them, all of them were built, you meant in 1997. Yes, that's when they were built. That's the year they were made.
You would have loved today. 93.9 was off the air for about 15 minutes. Well, maybe a little bit longer. And no one had any idea.
It was.
Usually it's 680 going off the air. So we're like, this is something new.
Nice.
Now what?
Nice
and
variety.
And so really, literally all I had to do was unplug a machine and plug it right back in.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is how you run the best radio station in Louisville. That's how you get a bestie. Plug your equipment in if you're scoring at home. That's a good tip.
Well, the mic processor in there, to get it to work better, I kicked it.
I like the technical. This is the kind of stuff, like, you can go to Prosser, or you can come here and get the firsthand experience of how you really get it done.
Do you remember, did you ever happen to see Armageddon?
I did.
The movie Armageddon.
I know it is, but I never saw
Armageddon. Well, there's a part, Nick, I don't know if you remember, in Armageddon where the United States and the astronauts have to connect to the guy who's in the Russian space station by himself.
Okay.
And something's going wrong, and they're trying to fix it, and he throws someone out of the way, and he grabs a wrench, and he goes, "In the Russian space station, here's how we fix problems."
He just starts whacking it?
And he just, yes, save that for the mixtape. And he starts beating this machine with a wrench. That's essentially what I do.
Fair enough. And quickly managed to tell you, save that for the mixtape. That's impressive. That's the nimbleness that we expect from our on-air personalities. Very nice. Nice work there. All right. I was going to tell you about this, that if you use the radio code, promo code RadioXL, you'll get a two-topping extra-large pizza and a two-liter for $14 at PapaJohns.com or the Papa John's app. I think when people come in, Nick, when we ask them to come in and state their business, I think they should have to do it like at the start of the football games. They should have to say it like, and you know, we'll do high schools so we don't have to do colleges. So where did he go? Wait, I forget where he went. Did he go to Jeff or New Albany? He went to Jeff, right? Andy Sweeney, Jeffersonville High School. And then he states his business. That's, you know, that's how they all used to do it in the pros, you know.
I want them to do it like Michael Ruzzioni in Miracle. Do? Just kind of like out of breath, you know. Andy Sweeney, Jeffersonville High School.
Radio XL gets you a two-topping extra-large pizza and a two-liter for $14, PapaJohns.com or the Papa John's app. What else we got going on here? Bowl games galore and the bowl season presented by Caesars Southern Indiana, UPS Jobs, Baptist Sports Medicine, and the Kentucky Office of Highway Safety. We've got your bowls. We got your bowl coverage right here. We got your bowl coverage. The Kentucky Wildcats are in action tomorrow. A special TMR pregame on ESPN 680, 105.7 from 10 till noon. Following the game, it's the Kentucky Farm Bureau Insurance postgame show with James Strebel and Jason Entz. First place in town will take your calls, hear from Coach Stoops and more. Belk Bowl coverage presented by NetGain, Enterprise Home Improvement, and Forst Bank. The Music City Bowl coverage is going on right now on our sister station, the pregame beginning at 1 p.m. After the game, it's the Coors Light postgame show with Mark Ennis. That'll be there, here, everywhere. The Music City Bowl coverage on ESPN Louisville, presented by Joel's Hot Chicken, Academy Sports and Outdoors, and UPS Jobs. Perfect. Look at that. Top of the hour, radio professionals here. That's what
also,
we
also give a quick score update here.
Louisville's not playing it.
No, no, no. But Western Kentucky is in the give me 1 second. It's refreshing. Sorry.
Thanks. Nice work, Nick. I love that. Let me interject and say nothing.
Okay, yeah, the First Responders Bowl. Sorry, geez. The First Responders Bowl. About a minute left in the first half. It's tied Western Kentucky 10, Western Michigan 10. The Battle of the Wests.
All right, there you go. We'll come back. We'll take a break. Thanks for being with
us. Who are you feverishly responding to?
Well, because people are sending intelligent texts, and then they get mad when they don't respond, so I try to respond. I'm trying to respond to everybody. It seems only fair.
By the way, I figured it'd be kind of cool. Our last guest of the decade.
Uh-huh.
Jameson Hensley. That would be awesome. That would have been so much better. This one's pretty good, too, though.
Who is it?
It's not a Tuesday, but it's a Monday with Fred.
Oh, Fred will join us.
Fred Calgo. We haven't
I'm
had
sorry I didn't
bit.
Bring up to Sully. Give him more fool. See, they are first day of racing at Santa Anita. Another horse gone. Unbelievable. By the way, Sweeney will like this. You all need to develop signals like in baseball so you can state your business without actually having to interrupt the show. But although the content is usually fantastic, like Andy's Russian cosmonaut impression, so I take back my request. It's the first time we've gotten a compliment for a Russian cosmonaut request. Jeffersonville High School, home of media luminary Tony Vannetti. He didn't go to Jeffersonville High School.
I don't know if he did, but Andy brings it up all the time, and it's funny.
Did not go
there. No, no, no. The media relations Jeff.
They keep claiming Tony?
No, they keep bringing Tony in to speak to the kids.
Oh, they do? And they won't ask,
like,
Andy?
What the hell? He was like, come on. I think one time, I could be totally wrong, I think they like reached out to Andy to get a hold of Tony or something along those lines, and Andy was just like, you guys are dead to me. Go Bulldogs. You started rooting for New Albany.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, Carl Schmidt has had everybody in America speak. He used to run this media seminar when he was at Churchill Downs, and he had everybody who ever was in media. I think he had one guy who was in charge of installing the wiring at a small AM station in Des Moines come speak to his class. And I never got asked to come speak to his class. It's like, yeah, I live right here. I don't need to talk to you people. They were like, no, we don't need you to come in. We're trying to get real professionals in to talk to them. I was like, cool, gotcha. Guy who used to speak to the class all the time will join us next hour, Fred Calgill. Sure, I think I'll give him grief about that. Sure.
2:30, he'll join the program.
2:30!
He'll be the last guest of the decade.
Unless I book somebody else after that.
Jameson Hensley would have been funnier, but we love Fred, and it's been a while. Well, a lot of people have texted.
If Andy heard you read that text, he'll probably be back in. He must not have heard it.
Well, no, because we're trying to...
He stayed in his business. He was trying to fix our computers.
We're banging on stuff with wrenches.
I have to tip my hat to business, though. When you can get a good bulk rate on computers, you take it. So what if they're Commodore 64s? You get this kind of a deal. You can't pass that up. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I loaded this disc in the second hour of the Midday Rush, and I think I'm going to get to play Snake by the end of the show.
Nice! That's pretty good. God, I still remember that when you used to have to put the little disc
some of those games,
the floppy disk in the
amazing
machine would say loading. And
There was a G.I. Joe game that I think would still be loading today. I found, and I was like, G.I. Joe, this is awesome.
Did you ever actually get to play it?
Nope.
You never loaded it?
The loading screen was a bunch of tanks leaving like the base to go off to war.
Maybe that was the whole program.
Then there's about a jillion tanks out in fighting the Cobras.
I want to end this hour on a happy note. I guarantee you've seen this because these are the kind of things you see. And if you haven't, you should. Did you see the little kid at the Bruins game?
No, I didn't see this.
It's not audio, so I just have to describe it. He goes to the boards and he has a big handmade oak tag sign that says, rock, paper, scissors for a puck. Go Bruins. And what the hell is the name of the guy of the Bruins? Number 13, I think, is his number. He comes over, he plays rock, paper, scissors with the kid in the glass, and the kid loses. He skates away. You know, they're doing their circles. He skates over the next time he comes around. He plays rock, paper, scissors. He loses again.
The kid does?
Yeah, and the player tilts his head like, sorry. Comes around a third time, and he plays paper, and the kid plays scissors, and he goes, oh, and he reaches down, he takes a puck, and he throws it over the boards. That's why I love sports.
That's really cool.
I've got it on my Facebook page. That's why I love sports. It's a beautifully made sign. The kid's got a Bruins jersey on. It's Go Bruins. That guy, I mean, I'm just amazed at that. That guy took, and it's easy to say, I never want to be too critical, but he took 1 minute out of his warm-ups, and he did something that kid won't forget for the rest of his life. It's very, very cool.
That was pretty good. So it also proves that he's pretty good at rock, paper, scissors.
NASA literally operated for a long time with 30-year-old IBM technology. Even on space shuttles, IBM had a division that would hunt down old computer parts just so NASA could have spare parts. If I were an astronaut, that might concern me a tad. I might say, guys, can we get with, technology from this century?
There was a show called, they still do it. I think it's called Junkyard Wars, where they go into a junkyard and they would build something and it would compete with somebody else, but they had to get spare parts from everything. And the challenge would be like they had to make like a makeshift like backhoe and build like a swimming pool, like dig a swimming pool or something. This time what they had was they each built submarines and they did this little nautical warfare thing in a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a bunch of engineers from MIT and they built like something with a sump pump and it would just go poof, 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 like, and it was pretty cool. And then it was a bunch of dudes from NASA and they had like a bunch of like fans. But if you looked inside, it was just duct taped together and cords and wires and everything. And the MIT guys looked in at it, and it was just like held together with chewing gum and cords going everywhere. They go, yeah, that looks like NASA. And even the NASA guys were like, yeah.
That's how we roll.
Yep, pretty much.
All right, we'll come back. Another hour to go on ESPN 680 105.7.